Okay, can you hear me okay?
Thanks very much for the introduction, and it's a pleasure to be here. It's lovely to hear all those poems. I think it's the first time I've ever used a dildo in a poem, so to speak. Congratulations to Michael for the great poem, which won. What we're going to do is I'm going to read probably three poems, and Eric's going to play. I'm going to read another three, Eric's going to play, and then we're going to finish off. I'm going to read as Eric plays, just to finish the evening off. So I'm actually going to start with a poem which is called Cardamoms. It's picking up on the dill from your poem. The spice cardamom, which you probably know, is just a little pod with a very, very distinctive taste. My father was a Church of England vicar, and I was brought up in a vicarage in North London, a sort of huge, huge old Victorian vicarage. And one of the things I remember it, but I'm never quite sure if I do remember it, but we had for a period of a few months a couple of Iraqi soldiers living with us, actually living in my father's bedroom. And I'm never really sure how this came about, and by the time I sort of thought to ask my parents, they actually couldn't remember. I think it's possible they were attending in some kind of officer training school. This would probably be back in the very late 50s, early 60s. But they were lovely, lovely men. And I guess as I think about it over the years, it's become a very poignant memory in the light of what's happened between the West and Iraq. So this is Cardamoms. I've only to bite on a cardamom to be back in my father's bedroom in the hands of Iraqi soldiers. Khazim and Lani, their names, perhaps. I'm going by sound. No one now to say how much of this is true. Who stayed with us 3 months? Who turned that room into a souk? Who sang softly behind their closed door? Who shyly took my shy mother to the shop to choose and model dresses for their wives? Who threw us up in the air and kissed us? Who threw us up in the air and caught us? Who kissed us with stinking moustaches? Who cooked on a small stove in that room, first time we'd ever seen men cook? Who from time to time would conjure up light, white, sticky cardamom cakes, the like of which we'd never tasted before? I've only to bite on a cardamom to see their zigzag over the lawn in an old car picked up for a song neither could drive. To see them hit the gatepost as they leave and lurch out into traffic, into history. I've only to break the shell, find the seed on my tongue, chew the tough fibre down to a bitter, woody tangle I can neither swallow nor spit out. That's all I have to remember. Now, this is a poem called This. It's a hard one to introduce, but it's called This. Chanced on in trees by a road, surely abandoned, an old terrier, ramming itself down burrows, rushing from one dirty hole to another, as if the only thing it knew to do was hurt itself and hurt itself again. We tried to keep our distance, tried to shoo and shout it off. It shrank back, circled, crept up, its hair lip, its filthy teeth, its shitty coat, the edge of menace running through its running. It shrank back, circled, crept up, at last had me cornered and lifted its head to bite, I thought, but only looked and looked. And in that look, such longing, such open, unguarded need. This world, which cares for nothing, which teaches such lessons of loss, which finds in the wounds of our eyes such gratitude, such love for itself. This world, our only home. This is just a short poem called Just, a fairly economical with titles in this book, so this is Just. Just the grebe on the lake, first thing. Just the wedge of its head taking shape. Then the swallow out of the boat shed. Then the ink of its wing on the water. Thank you. I live quite near the small village of Hilltown in County Kilkenny, and some years ago I had a sort of strange dream that the last tiger in the world had come to Kilkenny, come to Hilltown to sort of pass the rest of its days there. And I was thinking about this after I'd had the dream, and I suppose what I've done in this poem is put this together with the idea of sponsorship. Seems to me nowadays almost everything is sponsored, is privatized or is sponsored, and you can imagine this becoming more and more the case. So you might end up I heard a story that the Alps, the lower slopes of the Alps were starting to melt, which would threaten the skiing industry, and that probably this would be such a sort of huge thing to do anything about, that the only way to do anything would be to actually privatise the Alps. So they might become known as the Coca-Cola Alps or the Audi Alps. And you could see this happening to everything, I guess, the Nissan Atlantic, Toyota Africa, things like this. So in this poem I just imagine the last tiger coming to Hilltown to try and spend the rest of his days, but also a tiger which is sponsored up to the hilt. So this is the last tiger in Hilltown. Though he's lent his name to a wide range of jungle products, he hasn't had to hunt in years. He's sticking to the road now, walking to numb a cramp, stopping for a paper at Anthony's or a pint of milk at O'Keefe's. When they needed to claim he was making a comeback, they'd film him on the prowl, let him stalk and savage what seemed to be a goat. Advertising slipped into the skin pattern, the undergrowth. Worst thing was the breeding. In the absence of a female, they tried all kinds of substitute. Most burst when he got excited. These days he's just not up to it, has frequent headaches. But every inch is photographed, genetic coding's nearly cracked. A decent imitation should be widely available soon. He can't remember himself which bits are meant to be real. This afternoon, negotiations over the new winter skin. Tomorrow, a French TV crew. Another offer to found a religion. The old attempt to finish his memoirs. Often, he's not there at all. Just the door open, radio on, vibration of stripes in a chair. That fuel shock, shimmer of air above slightly parting grass. A few new years ago, I was in a pub actually in Birmingham, and it was a strange new year because we were some friends, but people kept coming up and talking to us and telling them what a terrible Christmas they'd had with their family. There's that old joke, the second law of relativity is that time goes slower with your relatives. But these were people are coming up with sort of quite sort of awful confessions of things that had happened to them. And I suppose, you know, Christmas is the time that brings these things out quite often in families. So what I did in this poem was to kind of take that idea of the baggage that we carry around with us all the time, really, and just to put it together with a moment when all of that just falls away and you may be genuinely alive for a moment in the here and now. So this is a poem called Prayer. How we survive, Lord. 22 homes, 16 schools before we were 10. those blind uncles touching us up. Our wounds wide open, our words not heard until we wept, but were not allowed to. Oh, the tears uncried, strained against the eyes, the good conduct medals. It's no wonder, Lord, fingers at the underwear, fists in the stomach, stories spooled inside us, pleading to be repeated. Look at us, crawling from the wrecks of our childhoods, begging any stranger for a hug. Oh, what happened, and what happened? Let us praise tonight ourselves, our flesh, bones, eyes, hands, hair, the brightness of our being. How should our light not shine? Look at us, Lord, praise us, real tonight as each other, as real as can be, beyond belief our beauty, our right to be here.
Amen.
This is a poem called Sleeping with the Kingfisher. It mentions, second line, Giraldus, who's Giraldus Cambrensis. You might know as a Welsh courtier who came to Ireland, I think in the late 1100s, and wrote one of the first histories of Ireland, a lot of which is concerned with wildlife. And as I guess was probably standard at the time, he used wild creatures usually to illustrate Christian morals or Christian stories, as if animals had been created for the purpose of edifying humans. And he has this wonderful story in his history that if you want to keep the bed linen fresh, the best thing is to put a dead kingfisher in the linen basket. I don't know how he got that idea. I've never tried it. It might work, but it's a strange and rather beautiful idea. So this is just called Sleeping with the Kingfisher. Its appearance in the bed wasn't surprising. Giraldus said a dead one kept linen fresh. No, what surprised was the size of the thing and the way it hugged me close to its breast. To feel its bill run the rule down my spine, to be enfolded in sapphire wings, surprising. How much more so to wake and find myself ablaze, my heart the blue seed in a blossom of flame.
Thank you.
finish off, I'm just going to read as Eric plays, to read over Eric's playing. I'm going to read poems, the second half of this new book, A Gather of Shadows, is a sequence of poems about the death of my mother, which happened about 5 years ago. My mother was, I guess for most of her life, really a very active woman. She loved walking, swimming, rowing. She lived a sort of very, very healthy life, I guess, but ironically spent most of her last 10 years increasingly being laid low, not with any sort of mortal illness, but just more or less with one thing going wrong after another, confining her to one particular spot. So I'm going to read seven, they're all actually quite short, but seven of the poems from this sequence. So as not to sort of interrupt them, I guess, with introductions, just to say that the poem Sea Fret, I'm not sure if sea fret is an expression more used in England than Ireland, but sea fret is just a kind of thick sea mist which can come down very, very quickly and be very extensive. In the poem Silence, the silence is personified. The silence is the she in the poem. And in the poem Lochmora, the journey taken was an imaginary journey. Touch the smoothed, silvered wood. It might buoy you into air wrung by waterfall, waterfowl, onto mirrored sky. Asking that it might bring back those hours strung on soft splashes, which wired you into the river until the river rode you, reined into and sustained you. A frill of water fraying off the blade, as you leant back and pulled, still able to work the world. Drown. At last, the faintest whisper of a wave led you back to shore. You got dressed, drove home, made breakfast, told no one, not a single word for 20 years. You're back inside that fret again. This time no shore can be found, and you're saying, I'm so sorry to let you all down. Life nor death will know where to find you. You'll be swimming somewhere in between, and in the dark you won't be able to tell which shore is which, and you would never ask. Beside you. She's asked you to clear some space for her. She doesn't leave now when we come in. When we talk, she tries to interrupt. You keep looking across at her. We can almost see her too. We too begin to fall under her spell. Soon she insists we leave. She wants you all to herself. wild flowers. You taught me most of what I know of flowers. Their names, of course, their habitats, their scents. And somehow, subtly, not by word of mouth, and much more than knowledge, a love for them. Now the names of even the most common escape you. And though I try to teach you what you once taught me, you don't really care. Where you're going, names make no difference. I'll not persist with them. Nor will I pick what flowers I find to bring. I know they'll not survive. Instead, I'll hold my hands around a bunch of living, growing stems. All that matters, their shy independence. But this might be held by being let go. Turned and tangled round themselves until we had to make a guess that we'd find it behind that ridge under Lochinafrin. We left the track, worked our way over cut stumps, rocks, holes, tussocks, rushes, bog, streams, fought through stunted firs, shared that good feeling of not knowing where we were going. Over the ridge, there it was, small, a neatly folded blanket at the mountain's foot, guarded by two giant boulders, covered in moss and the soft ears of St. Patrick's cabbage. The water, peat-stained, clear, hung still as silence over its bed of rounded, overlapping stones. You stripped, waded straight in and began to swim away. Can I come with you? Not this time, no. Taken no food for weeks. your breathing wouldn't stop. In and out, slow and steady as the stroke of an oar, it just kept on going. As if that breathing had become a pair of oars, rowing of their own accord. Each stroke rowing you further away from us, deeper into the distance, until, with the slightest click, those oars were docked.